Good morning, everybody. Stephanie, could you call us to order, please?
William Gingold.
Here.
Gil Kennedy.
Here.
Ann Robin.
Here.
Sue Suter.
Here.
Deb Roosh.
Here. Okay, first of all, I would like to extend a warm welcome to two new board members, both who have long histories of public service and human service work. And they are Ms. Sue Suter, who is a former DDB board member. Welcome back. And Dr. Ann Robin, who is a former MHB member. Welcome. And if you, either one of you would like to say a few words.
Good to see everybody.
Okay. Okay, I'd like to make a motion to approve the agenda as presented. Is there a second? Discussion? Okay, the agenda is approved. Item 5, citizen input, public participation. Anybody? I don't have a whole lot to comment on today. We did hear a little bit of good news about rate increases. We had the SILA 3.5% SILA increase went into effect July 1st, and then the home-based services was that starts August 1st. Is it?
It's possible that it also starts July 1st. Do you know?
So it's my understanding that the overall budget for families did not increase, but that the rates across the board for all of the waiver programs increased by 3.5%.
By 3.5.
So it actually, for families who use self-directed services, if they're using any agency-based services, it does kind of stretch the amount that they are able to pay their own workers because the pot of money is the same. So it usually changes on January 1st and is linked to whether or not Social Security increases, so it's generally three times SSI.
Okay, Executive Director's report, Lynn.
So three of you already have seen this report. I didn't change any of it. I just thought to repeat it for the new people because it's sort of an overview of some of the activities of other staff that are, like, just to demonstrate that there are some ways that we're trying to support the programs and people who receive services that are a little bit outside of agency contracts. And then my activities, which are mostly ongoing, there aren't a whole lot of special projects this year, but mostly like committee engagement, and then some special ideas at the end. And Deb Roosh has been involved in some of those special ideas, so if we ever wanted to develop one of those, we could. There's some are already a little more developed than others.
Okay, I think this is going to be a pretty quick meeting today. Under new business, the first item that we have to take care of by statute or by bylaws is election of officers. And we're in a little bit of a unique position this time around in that we have two board members who are relatively new and then two brand new board members, although they both have experience on boards quite a bit. So it looks like you're stuck with me for a little while until our other, my fellow board members feel like, one or more of them feel like they're ready to step into this particular position. So I guess there's a consensus that there will not be an election for the position of president today. However, we do need to elect a secretary. Correct.
Okay. Is everyone comfortable with that? Like, per the bylaws, Deb can remain as president until someone is ready to do that. So there's nothing in the bylaws or the statute that prevents you from having more elections. You just have to have some elections in July. So we'll have an election for secretary, but for president, we can have an election, a special election, whenever someone else is ready to do it.
August or September of this year, potentially.
Deb, I just want to say I think it's very nice that you're willing to continue.
Well, I have one more year on the board as it stands, so I'm happy to continue on. Okay, so we do need, like I said, to elect a secretary, so I'll entertain motions.
I'd like to nominate Gail if she would be interested in serving as secretary.
Well, I appreciate that, and yes, I am willing to give this a try.
Second.
Is there discussion? Yay, Gail. Okay. So does this require a voice vote, Stephanie, or an individual? Okay. So all in favor of appointing or electing Gail Kennedy to assume the role of Secretary of the DDB? Aye. Opposed? Congratulations, Gail. Okay, the second item under new business is the UIUC evaluation capacity proposal. The information related to that proposal is on pages 13 to 18 in the packet. We've had a little bit of discussion this past month in particular about this option for consideration. This is something that the MHB has been working this group with four years. In particular, Community Choices has found it extremely helpful working under an MHB program in building evaluation capacity. So I just want to open that up for discussion. Maybe I should just make a motion so that we can discuss. So the motion is to approve participation in the Program Evaluation Capacity Project with the cost of $33,211 to the CCDDB to implement the scope of work presented in the Capacity Building Evaluation Year 5 proposal, contingent upon approval of the proposal by the Champaign County Mental Health Board. Is there a second? Discussion? No discussion?
Well, I guess I would ask, you know, do we have a direction in which we want to take this? If we're approving that we want to implement this, do we want to direct this towards certain programs that we fund?
Last month, I directed a question to our representatives from Developmental Services Center. I think that DSC is the ideal agency since we fund DSC at such a high rate. It makes sense to me that we try to work with DSC on this proposal on a trial basis, a pilot basis, to see if this may be helpful. I know Community Choices has found it helpful. So I guess we need to really do fact-finding to work with DSC then to come to an understanding about what program you feel might be the most beneficial to you all for this trial. Okay, and certainly.
Either with staff or with the board or whatever, that would be a kind of a natural next step.
Okay.
I just want to say that having been on the mental health board the last few years and worked with this group, they're very professional, they're very personal. I have heard only positive comments from all of the organizations that they've worked with, and I think that they've helped especially some of the smaller organizations take a big step up in terms of their ability to do really professional level evaluation. And since our job is to do evidence-based disbursement of money, this gives us some evidence to work with. So I think it's a big plus, and the amount of money is quite reasonable. That's my opinion.
Okay, thank you. I wonder then if it might be, I guess we need to do a little bit more fact-finding behind the scenes if we're to approve this and then determine what other organization, because it's my understanding that we will have two programs.
Can I comment here? I think the proposal suggests that all of the programs participate at different levels of interaction in the effort here, whether it's through training, whether it's actual involvement in developing the logic models in terms of specific programs, et cetera. I think what we want to do is look at this program for all of our agencies and kind of prod, maybe that's not the best term, certain agencies to be more involved than others at different points in time. That would be my suggestion.
Does this level of funding support that, garnering participation by all of our programs, and at what level?
If you want to keep the discussion open to agency input, we could ask Becca that question. But I wanted to share with you, Bill's right, there is a level of support for all agencies through the consultation bank and the workshops. The logic model workshops initially weren't very well attended. So Mark Driscoll started getting the news out a little more, a little earlier and a little more broadly. And then people were using that. I think Becca may have been involved in all three of the components. Is that right? Of this project. And there's one other thing that you should know that they do for us, which, the board staff have a commitment to working on our own products, to making them more readable and maybe more meaningful. And so we've had some help from these researchers toward that end, too. They've rewritten the application instructions, that type of thing. And that work is never over. So if they are involved through this, again, that's something that they would give us under this contract, especially if something is particularly problematic for agencies or board members, they can help us write it better.
So I guess I'm not quite sure which three components, but we were involved. We were one of the targeted agencies back in FY17, I believe, for our Connect program, so our self-determination grant, to sort of look at the main outcomes that we're looking for with that program are human connections, which are difficult to measure. And so we worked with them to develop a logic model that we had one of the doc students that was part of their team sort of work with us on an ongoing basis, on like a one-on-one basis, to sort of develop what that looked like, and then to develop some evaluation tools that we could use that were specific to our organization that we've continued to use and continued to build on. And we've also, I've participated in, I think, two of the logic model workshops for both that program and for one of the other programs to sort of help sort of do a little bit of redesign, which was extremely helpful. We haven't been able to use the consultation bank to the extent that I think I would like to. It's been, the resources that exist there are much more specific to mental health organizations. And while it's been, I've browsed through it a little bit, they haven't been super applicable to some of the work that we're doing. But I do think that there are some nice evaluation tools out there for specifically for people with developmental disabilities that would be great to kind of have some people sort of walk us through and do a little bit of that fact-finding for us, this, and just kind of a little bit of that connection. So as I think about this, if you want just my general input, I can think of a lot of projects within our organization where we maybe wouldn't need the same level of like ongoing kind of every week or every other week meetings that we were initially involved in, but that having somebody that we could reach out to for just kind of some like, hey, can you talk me through this piece of it, or I've done this, can you take a look, would be hugely helpful.
If that's helpful to the board in making a decision today, which you could wait. The Mental Health Board will be considering this contract next week, so they have they have a proposal that includes DDB and then a proposal that doesn't. So it's kind of like, if you decide today one way or the other, that's helpful, but it's not the end. So if it's helpful to you to make in making a decision today to know this, Becca has already agreed to have a program be one of the pilot programs. And that was, I think the researchers feel like they know your organization well enough that they would know where to get in. Do you feel like you could push them toward that kind of the DD related outcomes? Do they, you have that kind of relationship with them?
With the researchers, with the U of I team? Yeah, I think so. I mean, one of the things that we did when we were a targeted agency was like look into some of the evaluation tools that existed. I think moving into a like an additional sort of targeted program, one of the things that I would be really interested in looking at is the CQL, which is the accreditation organization. I think both us and DSC use a very intensive assessment tool called a POM, Personal Outcome Measures. It's a little bit onerous to use, which I think a lot of agencies feel. I would love personally some input from them on how to integrate that into some of the things that we are currently doing and make it a little bit usable and to just sort of develop some of the background tools that can help us manage the data that comes out of it, which is like significant. Yes, this is a good word. So that would be one thing, but also just then kind of integrating that into just how we generally function and how my staff are, you know, collecting data on a regular basis and reporting it to me so that I can report it to you. Just some of those really practical things to make that information really accessible and meaningful to make decisions from and also to look at it as an evaluation technique.
So do you think that using the UI, U of I evaluators, they have access to the and the copyright, the rights to use that CQL information, or how would that work? Is there?
There's a way around that.
Yeah. Well, we do. So. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So if they wanted to put some version of that into their online materials that all the agencies could use, there is a way around it, and that's that. There's been a lot of projects crosswalking the personal outcome measures against the what are they called? The national indicators? National core indicators. And we have borrowed those and put them into the priorities memo the last couple of years. We really tried to focus on them this last time around because there was a moment where Kim and I were trying to think about reworking the priorities completely so that they were just outcomes, like the outcomes were priorities. It proved to be a really difficult project, but on page 35 of the board packet, you can see the overarching priorities are in a report we're going to look at later, and the outcomes listed there come from that crosswalk, which is publicly available. So it compares the personal outcome measures with the national core indicators. So we kind of, I think that's a way around. And at some point, CQL was really eager about that work because when the new home and community-based services regulations went into effect, they were right in the front, like, let's use our tools, right? Okay.
Further discussion?
Call for the question.
Okay, so again, the motion is to approve participation in the Program Evaluation Capacity Project with a cost of $33,211. Stephanie, could you call?
William Gingold?
Yes.
Gail Kennedy?
Yes.
Ann Robin?
Yes.
Sue Suter?
Yes.
Deb Roush?
Yes. The motion is approved. Okay, the CCDDB FY 2020 draft budget is on pages 19 through 29.
Mistake. Okay.
Let's hear it.
I was expecting a much bigger mistake than this. On page 22 in the draft SILA fund budget, one of the expenditures, utilities, is listed as 533.93. The correct line is 533.28. I'm sure that was bothering everyone. So this leads to the.
The line item, really.
So I did get information from the county yesterday, and I went into the budgets to see how much they should, how much they might be different for this year, because the, you know, the revenue process is quite fluid, so we don't really have solid revenue projections ever. So I got information yesterday from the county about 2019 revenue and went to the first spreadsheet to put it in and realized it matches. So we're good right now. We don't have to do – there are no revisions related to the revenue projections for this year. There may be revisions later in the year as we learn more about – the costs associated with benefits for staff, or if there's if the county puts a ceiling on salary increases for staff, if we were to move, our rent amount would be different, and we might also have to add some lines for technology and things like this. That's not quite on the table, but there is a chance that everyone in Brookins is going to have to move somewhere else someday, since Brookins is, you know, the clock is ticking on Brookins. And then obviously, like, the 2020 revenue projections are also fluid. So there may be changes later in the year related to that. But I wanted to present to you what we know now, so that when I start talking to the county, I have, you know, some measure of confidence that the Mental Health Board and the DD Board have been involved in the budget process and are comfortable with it. So if you see things that need to be changed, we can do that too, but it's basically asking you to approve receiving the revenue, the total revenue amount, and then spending the total revenue amount for each of the DDB budget and the SILA budget. Within those lines, there can be sort of ongoing fluidity. There has to be in response to the revenue projections.
I move approval of the draft budget.
Stephanie, would you call?
Bill, could you read the motion that's on page 20?
Motion to approve the attached 2020 CCDDB budget with anticipated revenues and expenditures of $4,200,372.
Second. I guess we need to make sure there's no further discussion on this before we vote. Anybody have any comments, questions?
Gail Kennedy?
Vote to approve.
Ann Robin?
Yes.
Sue Suter?
Yes.
William Gingold?
Yes.
Deb Roush?
I move to approve the SILA budget.
Discussion? Okay, so.
I didn't quite understand the with the mental health board and the mortgage and
no, you can answer.
Well, I appreciate the question. This has been a big year for the SILA fund. The Mental Health Board has accumulated more fund balance than they needed because of, this is not, it's not good news. It's not a result of great budgeting. It's because of excess revenue returned by agencies when they have been unable to fulfill the contract, usually because they couldn't hire staff. That's really a problem. So that was called to our attention because the fund balance is bigger than what they need, but also because it reflects a serious problem that's actually been a problem for DD for a long time, and now it's hit mental health services as well. So there were several ideas about what to do to bring the fund balance down, and the most obvious one was pay off the mortgage. So they took money out of fund balance, about $300,000 out of fund balance. Yes, they took $300,000 out of fund balance, and then $100,000 came out of the SILA budget itself because it had a little bit of fund balance built up. And then with the other mental health board normal contribution of $50,000, which each board has been doing for a while, paid off the full note. So then as a result, the two boards revised that intergovernmental agreement pretty substantially. We had a real estate attorney help us think of every possible thing that could happen next, including how to fund it after the DD board has contributed the same amount that the mental health board has. So we predict 2023 that will be true, but at that point there may still be a need for maybe repairs to the house or even the cost of property management or liability insurance. At the moment we're covered by the county's liability insurance. I'm not sure that's optimal for all parties. So there could be expenses that we don't expect. And so this new intergovernmental agreement instructs the boards on what they can do in the event of any of these things, and including selling the homes.
Okay, so the motion is to approve the attached 2020 SILA fund budget with anticipated revenue and expenditures of $64,000. Stephanie?
Ann Robin?
Yes.
Sue Suter?
Yes.
William Gingold?
Yes.
Gail Kennedy?
Yes.
Deb Rouch?
Yes. Okay, moving on to D, under new business. We have on pages 30 to 44 the needs, prevalence, and funding priorities, a briefing memorandum is included for information in preparation for the next round of funding priorities. Any comments, questions about that?
Yes, I would encourage staff to continue to research prevalence and incidence data for different IDD disabilities. So we can maybe eventually get a better handle in terms of our relative response to the needs of Champaign County.
I found it very helpful using the surveys that are out there and the information. It was a very good summary of what we're looking at.
Still amazed that the federal government stopped collecting information in the 70s, right? Still amazing. Okay.
This was a sort of a science project. We started with one goal and realized we could not accomplish that goal, and that was to create, a more flashy, kind of appropriate for media release with solid data. But just by coincidence, I was on two conference calls in a row where the director of our national association was complaining about that. So I was like, okay, we need to do something different with this memo because we had gotten it to a certain point and we're kind of frustrated at the dead ends. And then we learned that it really was a dead end. So we decided to switch courses and just create a memo that shows you the current funding priorities, what programs are funded under those priorities, and then a review of your three-year plan goals, because when you reconvene in September, those will be the things in front of you.
Okay, item E, board direction.
In a circle?
Okay, successes and other agency information.
Give us some successes. Make us feel good.
Well, one of the programs that you've funded for about five, is it the fifth year, is going to be receiving an award in about 3 days, and no one will be there to receive it or to see them receive it from the National Association of Counties, because this is a program which expanded on the state requirements on behalf of people who don't have state funding, and they did it sort of one carefully planned step at a time. So the National Association of Counties are looking at that as a model.
So is this on? It is on. Orange, red, I think, red. It's a success, I think, in many ways, because it's been an undertaking. We're doing a great deal of an expansion with the ISCs, and then also expanding with the DDB contract. So we've hired new staff and working on expanding our services, and not only expanding territory-wise with regard to our state contract, but then also expanding the number of people that we can serve that are not on the waiver in providing conflict-free case management and person-centered planning. A success and quite the undertaking, but I think we're making it. So
I think the write-up, Lynn, that you sent us, I think it was in the paper, in WCIA, that was really good. I mean, that's really speaks a lot of our county and people working together, and that's huge recognition. Congratulations.
So Lynn is passing out a Finding Your Way from the Lygus Family Advocates Program, and it's kind of a roadmap. It's very friendly to the eye, and then it tells you where to start, and it gives you a step-by-step roadmap to determining eligibility and getting on the PUNS list. And then on the back, it has planning for your DD services, so it's kind of written out the steps that you need to take that are aside from enrolling in PUNS. It's got how to apply for Medicaid. It talks about group homes. If you want to tour group homes, you can go on the DHS website to find a list of SILA providers. Sorry, not group home, SILA.
Quick question. Do any of our agencies have any difficulties in getting recertifications for Medicaid clients?
Yes, I think that's unanimous. It's not a great process, and they kind of have it divided into two, where the ISC is responsible for one form of redetermination, and then the providers are responsible for another form. And just in the last, I would say, 6 to 12 months, there's a lot of people that were dropped from their Medicaid services support, and we had to do redeterminations with a gap in service, as opposed to it just being streamlined. And they're in the process of cleaning that up, but it's been really messy for quite some time, where I know our case managers spend hours and hours, and sometimes you'll get a letter that'll tell you what time the call should be, and you'll sit and wait for hours, or the letter's 3 days after the call was scheduled. so you automatically miss it. So there's, it's just been really inefficient and been really messy in the last, within this last year, but seems to be kind of on the mend. Is that fair to say? I don't know if that's been your experience.
Yeah, that has also been our experience. I think for a lot of the folks that we work with, their families manage their benefits, and so a lot of times those letters were then going to families who really didn't have any sense of what needs to happen or needed to have happened, 3 days before they were told. And so it was resulting in people sometimes being dropped from Medicaid for up to 6 months. So if they use home-based services, for example, like their workers weren't getting paid for very extended periods of time.
Do when they're dropped and they don't receive any benefits for 6 months, is it just lost? Like, or do they, there's no way to go back and recoup that for people?
Medicaid, you can go back 3 months for sure without any issue. We had a few cases where they were willing to go back farther than that. Partially, I think, because the ARC and a lot of other organizations did a lot of advocacy at the state level to address the issue. My understanding was that it was partially because of a computer update where they just sort of the timing and the communication related to the redeterminations was just went haywire, for lack of a better word. And so they have been working to sort of correct that. And I would agree that it is getting better. I haven't had anybody kind of run into that problem probably in the last 6 months. And the people kind of in there on the cusp it was fixed a lot more quickly.
How often does redetermination occur for each individual? Is it annual?
Annually. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. there was.
Let me make a suggestion. ARC Illinois has a consultant who I had the opportunity to listen to on a presentation on Medicaid redetermination or determination. I would encourage maybe staff to explore the possibility of getting her here and maybe do a seminar for people that would be interested in that. That are involved in that. It was shared in one of the board packets previously, so I would encourage maybe some follow-up on that.
What is her name? Does she often present with Brian and Benji Rubin? Is this the same?
I believe it was Sherry Schneider.
Sherry Schneider, so. Yeah.
So would you prefer that as a study session so that the board is included or as one of the monthly workshops that Kim is staging they're targeting case managers in DD, but other people are welcome to attend if they register?
I would suggest for case managers and other interested parties.
I think to make it available to as many people as
sure.
possible, families, individuals.
Sure.
So the issue has been a backlog and a computer issue.
Yeah, and I wish I could speak with more authority on exactly what happened. But basically, it seemed like people were sort of kicked out of the system. They didn't have a good system for getting them. All of the letters saying, okay, you need to do your redetermination, were not sent out in a timely way. And a lot of times families and even case managers, the fact that needed to happen, 3 days before they got the letter, they're just not anticipating it. And so it caused a lot of delays. So,
did it happen more often when families were managing funds versus, or was it just kind of across the board, everybody was getting hit?
Just a generic update or whatever, like Becca described, and I don't know how long it was before they realized that it had happened. People started, a few people lose their redetermination, and you think that somebody's missed a mailing, I think as they realized that the number was growing, that there was something big that caused the problem, as opposed to people missing deadlines and not doing the paperwork in a timely way. So, and then it's just the manpower of trying to, get it fixed.
Due to computer error and human error at the state level that people lost benefits that they're never going to see again is just so wrong.
I know several months ago, I sit on the DD Quality Committee with the DHS, and, they gave a contact at that. His name is Jay Bone. with DHS, that and he was the one that was able to go back further or approve it to go back a little bit further. So they ended up giving people a contact so that they could argue that or, you know, justify it longer than the 3 months if possible. But, you know, our efforts obviously were to avoid it going past the 3 months. But it's been a big undertaking, and, you know, our response is late, and you're the ones that are kind of the face for the issue. It's, you know, kind of like the restaurant service industry, the cook and the server. So you get to be the one to deliver the news and try to fix it and, you know, just kind of work through it. And I'm sure that that's been similar all across the
state. Absolutely.
And
I know one of the things that they did in response was to identify like a DD waiver sort of point person at each local office. And so ideally that person kind of understands the waiver system in a way that your, you know, average caseworker at DHS may not, so that they can kind of, when these issues come up, they can kind of address it a little more quickly. And I think that that's been really helpful. And I know as a provider, it's been really helpful to have like a local person that we can reach out to and be like, hey, this thing happened again. Can you please get in there and fix it for us? And so that has been helpful. And I do think it is getting better, but absolutely. I think people, you know, saw it as sometimes like, well, why didn't you guys do the thing? And we're like, it's bigger than just us, unfortunately.
My other question or comment is, can the ISC play a greater role in helping with the redetermination?
So that is something that we're involved in. As you know, I've been nodding my head to everything that they're saying. It, in my opinion, it's been a multifaceted issue for many years. I think this has been going on for some time. But then that was that huge number of people brought it to the forefront. At that point, then DHS actually took some onus and tried to be a little bit more active in, you know, these point people, and that has helped. So we're a part of that. We help out with redeterminations much like they do. So we're a part of the equation.
Go for it.
All right, old business. On pages 45 to 47, we have a decision memorandum regarding BY 2020 funding for UCP's program, which that vote was deferred. Let me just get to the right page.
I move for the approval.
Okay.
I second it.
So just for clarity, the motion is to approve funding of $60,000 for United Cerebral Palsy Land of Lincoln Vocational Services as presented in the staff recommendation above. Is there discussion?
I would just like to commend staff on, I think it was a very good write-up and recommendation, and covered issues that I think needed to be specified, and I think staff did a great job of doing that.
And you also got the UCP moving in the right direction.
Okay, so it's my understanding now that we're not moving to a fee-for-service model for this particular contract. Okay. Any further discussion? Stephanie?
William Gingold?
Yes.
Gail Kennedy?
Yes.
Ann Robin?
Yes.
Sue Suter?
Yes.
Deb Roush?
Yes. Motion's approved.
I'm sorry, I have a great question. Sorry. How many individuals in Champaign County does UCP serve?
There are microphones up here. Would you mind coming up to that? Oh,
there you go.
Through our MH program that we did not get funding for, we had 29 individuals. We were able to move some of them who had dual diagnosis to our DD program. So right now we're at 21. Well, with the five that we moved, we'll be 26. We have 26 that we're serving currently.
Thank you.
You're
You're welcome.
Last funding year, how many did you serve on the DD side?
We had 21.
You had 21.
Yes.
Okay, so
and
this,
then now
we the same 21 that will continue on, and then
yes, they will all continue. And then, like I said, with the loss of the MH, we have moved about 5, possibly more, over. So we'll be at 26 now. And I believe when I wrote the proposal was for 25, so we're going to exceed that.
Welcome aboard.
Okay, meeting schedules are on pages 48 to 51. Our acronyms are on pages 52 to 59.
Did we get a test on the acronym?
No, it's ever expanding and ever changing. It's not testable. Two, it's just when you get used to one acronym, they throw that one away and you've got a new one. So, you know, you can't stay ahead of it. Mark's not here, but Lindy, or do you have any CCMHB input?
The Mental Health Board will meet on July 17th at 5:30 p.m.
in this room,
I think. And their business is roughly similar to this. They'll look at the U of I proposal, and they'll also look at the budget documents. They have a pretty interesting presentation coming, too. It is a presentation that there's actually a meeting just down the hall of this group, the CIT Steering Committee, which is involves lots of local law enforcement and emergency services and agency stakeholders and other units of local government and some service providers like Salt and Light, which we might never see at our meetings, but they're very involved with this population. There's the leadership of the CIT Steering Committee will be presenting on improving our crisis response in this community through specifically creating a place where people can go other than jail or hospitals when they're having a mental health related crisis. So it might not be big, it might just be for the purpose of triage to determine what is the right place for them to go. But it's something that I think the Mental Health Board has waited a really long time to hear about, and it's actually starting to have some momentum. So if that's of interest to you, that's the first thing on the agenda at 5:30 next Wednesday, and then the rest is budget stuff.
Thank you, Lynn. Staff reports are deferred this month. Are there any board announcements? We are adjourned. Thank you.